Okay, so first of all, I would just like to thank the organizer for inviting me here to give this talk. So what I'm planning to do today is to present two possible methods to get high energy pulses in a particular laser system. So the nature of this talk is geared more towards the physics of laser dynamics, but hopefully by the end of the talk, you'll be able to see there's actually a lot of rich mathematics in the underlying theory. And by the way, I included this picture here, so it's just to remind me that even if a city, so this is from Seattle, so even if a city rings a lot, it can still be a nice city. So, okay, so the term optical soliton is actually first proposed by Hasegawa and Tepper in 1973. So what they did is they predicted that stable soliton solutions can exist in optical systems, for example, a fiber. So basically what we have here, so this blue thing here, it is a piece of glassy fiber. So this fiber is normally, it has dispersion, and it is also nonlinear in the sense that the refractive index depends nonlinearly upon the intensity of the electric field. So when the two effects, so when the linear dispersion effects balance the nonlinear effect in the fiber, we can achieve a very stable optical soliton. And the governing equation for this type of propagation is the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, or the NOS equation. So this is the basic model that everyone in the optics field is studying. So first term here is just a propagation where psi is the term psi here, it is the envelope of the electric field. So if the propagation term, the second term is the dispersion, and the third term is the curl nonlinearity of the medium. So this NOS equation has been well studied, and it has exact solution of the form hyperbolic secant. Okay. So, but the thing is, in realistic fiber systems, we normally can achieve a perfect soliton solution for two reasons. First is, in realistic systems, we always have some kind of other dissipative effects. Say like the fiber has loss and we have energy pumped to the system, so we need to consider a perturbed version of the NOS equation. And the second reason is, so most of the time we are not launching an exact solution into the fiber. We are starting the laser with a bunch of white noise, and hopefully the nonlinear effects and all the other dissipative effects will shape the initial white noise into a stable pulse. So that's why we need to study a perturbed version of the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. And the perturbed NOS equation, it has it describes the propagation of robust localized pulses under the influence of this dissipation. And practically, this type of so-called dissipative solitons can be achieved using things called the Mode-Lock lasers. So here I have two typical examples of Mode-Lock lasers that people build and have been studied over the years. So the first one here on the top left is actually the first and the most famous experiment built by Hermann Hausse at MIT in the early 90s. And the second one here is just a modified version of it. So basically what we have here is a piece of fiber, and it is bent into a ring shape. So this type of fiber is in general called the ring cavity lasers. So we have a piece of fiber which is both dispersive and nonlinear, and then we have something called the saturable absorber. So this is just how people call it technically, but what it actually does is it provides some kind of intensity discrimination to shape the initial pulse into a localized structure after a certain number of round trips. So what we're doing here is we launch a bunch of white noise into the laser cavity and let it circulate around the laser cavity. So after each round trip, the electric field will hit the saturable absorber, and then it will be shaped, and then after many round trips, hopefully we'll achieve some kind of steady state solution in the governing equation. So from these two figures, the saturable absorber is actually constructed by this guy here. So in the first experiment, we have a polarizer, and in the second experiment, we have also have a polarizer and a bunch of other so-called mode locking elements. So if you are familiar with digital SLR cameras, a polarizer basically is just this thing here, which you add in front of your camera lens. So basically what it does is it selects out or it gets rid of the unwanted polarization components in your laser cavity. So let's say this is an unprocessed image, and when you apply this polarizer and when you rotate the polarizer at a certain angle, you can get rid of the glare of the environment and you get a better image. Okay, so basically the exact same story here. What we're trying to do is to see how do we adjust the angles of the polarizer and the mode locking elements such that a stable pulse can be achieved. Okay, so this is a simulation here which describes the underlying principle of operation of these kind of ring cavity lasers. So the red spot here is just a circulating electric field in the laser cavity, and after each round trip it hits the mode locking elements, so the polarizer and the other stuff, and we have an output coupler to extract the field out of the laser cavity. And since this usually involves some kind of energy loss, we need to supply energy into the laser as well, and we have some gain medium. Okay, so these four are the critical components of a ring cavity laser. So initially we inject a bunch of white noise into the laser cavity, and then after certain round trips, the if the mode locking elements are appropriately oriented, we get a nice looking pulse out of the laser cavity, and this is a very robust process. Okay. So this is the actual mathematical model that we would like to study, and this is a very well-known and recognized model to describe the underlying mode locking dynamics in the laser cavity. So this equation is actually first proposed by Hermann Hauss in 1991, and it is usually called the master mode locking equation, but mathematically this is just the cubic quintic Ginsberg-Landau equation. Okay, so on the left hand side we still have the prototypical propagation, so which is governed by the NLS. Okay, so we have the propagation term, we have the dispersion term, and we have the curl nonlinearity of the fiber. And the stuff on the right hand side, basically it just describes the dissipative process in the laser cavity. So the first term here is called the saturation gain, so it is just how much energy you inject into the laser cavity. And it is saturable because this gain here, G of Z, is described by this function. Okay, so this L2 norm, it basically measures how much energy you have in your cavity. So usually if you have a large amount of energy in your laser cavity already, the gain cannot deliver that much energy. So if the L2 norm is large, then the gain is small, and if the L2 norm is small, then the gain medium can provide more energy into the laser cavity. Okay, and this gain is usually bandwidth limited, so that's why we have this second derivative term here. So if you take a Fourier transform of this term, it is basically 1 minus tau times k squared, so it is a parabolic gain profile. So this guy here, saturating gain, together with the gain bandwidth it describes, it represents that the gain, it actually amplifies certain frequencies of the signal in the laser cavity. And we have some kind of loss here, And the most important part of this master mode locking equation actually comes from the last two terms. So here we have a cubic term and a quintic term. So these two terms together, they describe the effect of the saturable absorber or the intensity discrimination of the laser cavity. Okay, so a mode locking operation is one that if this condition is satisfied. So basically we have a cubic gain, we have a quintic loss. So what that means is high intensity portions of the pulse is favored over the low intensity portion. So we start with something of low level and then we use this PDE to see what happens when this initial condition evolves. Okay, so since the high intensity portion is favored, this initial pulse forms to a higher pulse. Okay, and when the amplitude becomes too high because of this cubic gain, the quintic loss will saturate. Okay, so we don't have any collapse or finite time blow up of this laser system. So this is what happened. So the figure on the left here is what happened when this condition is violated. So when beta and mu both positive. So if I have both a cubic gain and a quintic gain, I inject some initial condition into the PDE, and then the initial condition will just blow up after a certain number of round trips. Okay, so this is an unphysical behavior that people would never see in the experiment. So we need to impose this condition to make sure that this is actually a physically relevant system. Oh, so this is an averaged model. So I'll show you. I'll get to that point in a minute. Okay. So that's a good point. So this equation, it actually is an averaged model which averages the discrete effect of that saturable absorber thing over the entire cavity. So this is an averaged evolution equation. Okay. And if the change per round trip is small, then the average model is kind of valid, okay? So what's the bad thing about studying fiber lasers? So first of all, I just want to point out some advantages of fiber lasers because so they're relatively cheap, they don't require careful alignment of the optical cavity, and the size is fairly small, okay? So these are the main advantages of ring cavity lasers. The thing is this type of laser, it usually has limited energy output. So what that means is if I inject more energy into the system, when you expect the energy would be confined within a single pulse, it doesn't. Okay? In that case, it breaks into two or more pulses, and this is an undesired effect. Okay? So we have a blue pulse here, and if you inject more energy, you expect this blue pulse to become this red pulse here. But this red pulse is an unstable solution in the master mode locking equation. So in that case, what happens is instead of getting this red pulse, we have these two black pulses. Okay. So this, in general, is called a multi-pulsing instability, and it's the kind of instability that we want to avoid. Okay. So the goal of this talk is how do we avoid the multi-pulsing instability using the nature of the PDE itself. So I propose two mechanisms to do that. So the first one is called the dissipative soliton resonance, and this is a joint project with Professor Philippe Galou from the University of Burgundy in France and my advisor Nathan Kutz. So what we're trying to do here is we take the master mode locking equation and then we vary the dispersion of the cavity. Okay. So the main contribution of this project is so the master mode locking equation I showed you before, it is a phenomenological model, meaning that the coefficients are totally random. Okay. So the question that people means experimentalists and engineers. So what they would like to know is how do we connect the theory to experiment, okay, to get something useful out of it. So we make use of an averaging process. So what we did is we take the so this everything inside the blue box here, they combine together to become an effective saturable absorber. So what that means is we take that thing and we can actually derive the nonlinear transmission of the saturable absorber using the nonlinear effects of the propagation equation. Okay, so I don't have time to get into that today, but if you're interested, we can definitely talk after this. Okay, so but in any case, we can actually show that the saturable absorber has some kind of periodic transmission, and the form of the transmission is given by this complex function here. So these guys, alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, alpha p, they are just the orientations of the polarizer and other mode locking elements. So the question is, how do we adjust the angles of those mode locking elements to get stable pulses? Okay, and this function q is nonlinear because the quantity w here it is proportional to the intensity of the field. Okay, so the story is we have a propagation describing the intracavity dynamics, and then after each propagation we hit it with this nonlinear transmission, and then so this is kind of like an iterative process. Okay, so we did some kind of averaging. So the story is we take that complex function q and then we distribute the effect over the entire laser cavity to get this average propagation equation. And you can notice that there's a term log q here. So if we take that term and then we do a Taylor series expansion in terms of the intensity of the field, we can actually back out the coefficients in the original master mode locking equation. Okay, so you give me the angles of these guys here, I can tell you what the coefficients of the master mode locking model are. Okay, so this is a more physically realizable model. So here I'm showing you some simulated results. So the thing here is it seems to us that there is a critical value of dispersion in the laser cavity. So what that means is, so for the parameters considered, we found that the critical dispersion is around negative 1.2. So if the dispersion of the laser is greater than the critical value, so initially we have a blue pulse, okay? And when you inject more energy into the pulse, instead of becoming taller and narrower, it breaks into two or multiple pulses, so multi-pulsing instability, okay? But the interesting thing here is if the dispersion is less than the critical value, say D is negative 1.6, okay? So you can inject energy into the laser cavity without pulse breaking. Okay, so in that case, the multi-pulsing instability is suppressed. And the only limiting factor is the energy injected into the laser cavity. So pulse breaking does not happen, okay? And so the message here is you get something that you pay for. Okay, so you inject energy and then you get that much energy out of the laser cavity. And those energy is confined within one single pulse instead of couple multiple pulses. Okay? What? Yes, so in that case, the pulse, instead of breaking into multiple pulses, it broadens. But the nice thing here is the chirp profile. So the chirp is the derivative of the phase. Okay, so the chirp is linear, so the wide pulse can be dechirped in some sense by just running it through some dispersive media. So you dechirp the pulse, and the pulse would become narrower. Okay. So the second mechanism is to use the periodic transmission. So what we are trying to do here is instead of varying the dispersion of the laser cavity, we try to vary the angles of the mode locking elements. Okay. So like I said before, we have to impose that condition on the top to prevent self-similar blow-up of the initial condition. And that is just a mathematical constraint which does not happen in reality. Okay. So, and the reason we have to impose that constraint is because when we get this average propagation evolution equation, we are trying to do a Taylor expansion of this periodic transmission function. So instead of doing that, we'll study the equation before the Taylor series expansion. Okay, so instead of getting a cubic and quintic nonlinearity, we study the whole thing. So in some sense, this is a more accurate model than the original Matzer-Mullucking model, which is the Ginsberg-Landau equation. Okay, so and numerical simulations actually show that no matter how you adjust the angles of the Mullucking elements, you always have bounded solutions in this case. Okay, so this the top two figures here is the simulations using the of the full system. So you have propagation, and then you have the discrete effect of the saturable absorber, propagation, and then saturable absorber. Okay, and the second one is the Matzer-Mullucking equation. So you can see that sometimes when you don't adjust the angles appropriately, we have this type of self-similar blow-up in finite distance. Okay, and this is the, we call it the sinusoidal Ginsberg-Landau equation, and clearly it doesn't have the problem of blowing up. Okay, so this SGLE model is a better model than the Matzer-Mullucking equation. But what's the nice thing about this equation? So you can adjust the angles appropriately such that you can get pulses of high energy that the Matzer-Mullucking equation cannot predict. Okay, so here I have three sets of configurations. So again, the alpha values, they are just the angles of the polarizer and the Mullucking elements. So with the first setting, what we get is if you inject more energy into a laser system, instead of staying as a single pulse, it becomes two pulses, okay? And the total energy of these two pulses is 2.22. So now we change the angles a little bit to this second setting here. So in this case, we have a single pulse of energy of 3. So you can see that by just changing the angles by just a little bit, I can prevent the multi-pulsing instability from happening. Okay, and the nice thing about this is if I change from second set to the third set, I can even get a single pulse with energy of 6.58. And in that case, actually, the Matzer-Mullucking equation will fail, because with this setting, what we found is the necessary condition for Mullucking, that beta has to be positive and mu has to be negative, is violated. Okay, so this pulse, it only exists in the full governing equation as well as the sinusoidal Ginsberg-Landau equation, but not in the Matzer-Mullucking equation. And this type of high energy solution, it actually has a 3-time increase in pulse energy. Okay? So the conclusion is, so multi-pulsing instability is the kind of instability that limits the pulse energy that can be delivered by the ring cavity laser. Okay? And this kind of instability can be prevented by using either the technique of this dissipative soliton resonance, which is to vary the dispersion of the laser, or by incorporating the periodic nature of the transmission in the governing equation. Okay, so this type of study actually, so to fully understand the multi-pulsing instability, there's actually a lot of mathematical techniques that need to be involved. So the first one will be the parameter optimization, namely how do we adjust those angles and dispersion such that a pulse of maximum energy can be obtained. Okay, so this is a nonlinear optimization problem. Okay, and the second one is to study the linear stability and the bifurcation of a single pulse into a double pulse. Okay, so these two directions will be my future work. So this concludes my talk, and thank you for your attention.